from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen from New Orleans, Louisiana, where it's so good, I have to say, to be back in a country where you can turn, when you're on the radio, you can turn your headphones as loud as you want them to be. I don't know if I mentioned this. When I was over in Edinburgh, I had asked the engineer there, can I turn my headphones any louder? And he said, no. I said, really? Why not? And he said, well, health and safety regulations. Health and safety regulations, ladies and gentlemen. They don't want the people in radio to go deaf because then they couldn't hear the fine work they're doing. Me, turn it up. You know me. From New Orleans, Louisiana. And you really can, unlike, I don't know. I didn't see all the coverage of the anniversary. I was blessed to be able to miss it. But you really can tell the journey that New Orleans has traversed in the past few months just by the kind of not quite handmade street signs that are at intersections on little poles, you know, for people who can't afford local newspapers, of which there's one. And it, of course, months and months and months and months ago, those signs were all about debris removal, house gutting, roofers, and tree removers. And now, as I was driving here today to the campus of the University of New Orleans, overlooking the science building, which is such a metaphor for our country, the signs were all for fencing, kitchen and bath, pain management, and hot-boiled crawfish, because we are, after all, in New Orleans. The mayor, of course, isn't. The mayor is direct from his record-breaking trip to New York to scare up some investors. And I do mean scare up. He's now reportedly in Shanghai. And we can just overhear a little of his presentation.
You gotta be kidding me. Excuse my French, everybody in America. This is a national disaster.
All right, that's the mayor. Pitching New Orleans investment in Shanghai. And some other news about New Orleans that may not have made the national coverage in the past week. Am I pleased with where we are today? No. That's the head of the United States Army Corps of Engineers, outgoing head, Lieutenant General Carl Strock. They all tell the truth when they're leaving, don't they? Pointing out that the levee system is not fully functioning. Snags have added to the frustration, he said. Earlier this week, the Corps discovered problems with the pump motors for three floodgates. Strock couldn't say whether the levee system would withstand a Category 3 hurricane, noting that that is a difficult question to answer. So is, have you been doing your job? Strock expressed remorse, which is almost an apology of the week, for the Army Corps of Engineers' role in the levee failures during Katrina. And that feels so good to know that on his way out of office, Lieutenant General Strock expresses remorse. F is for FEMA, ladies and gentlemen. The Federal Emergency Management Agency's urban search and rescue teams are underfunded, understaffed, and in need of better oversight, according to the Inspector General of the Department of Homeland Security. Urban search and rescue, quote, is a great program staffed with the cream of the first cream of the crop of the first responder community, says Democrat on the Homeland Security Committee of the House. The program lacks consistent funding, however, financial oversight, and adequate administrative staffing to handle routine maintenance of the program. Well, that's all. The IG said FEMA failed to evaluate the work of the individual urban search and rescue task forces and to set clear goals for them. To be better prepared for the next emergency they face, the urban search and rescue teams must be completely staffed, fully funded, and better analyzed, the report says. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, they're ready to go. And put this one to rest, the buildings of New Orleans were left covered with mold after the floods, but it seems the spores pose little threat to the city's inhabitants. This from New Scientist magazine's high levels of airborne fungal spores were reported in the flood zone soon after the hurricane. One species of particular concern was Stachybotrys. Stachybotrys, men have named you, which is blamed for a wide range of health problems, particularly in people with asthma. But last week, the International Congress on Aerobiology in Switzerland heard that few airborne spores reached the unflooded areas of the city. So we're okay, Jack. That's the latest from New Orleans. But before we go any further, my favorite news story of the week, ladies and gentlemen. You may have heard this, but I didn't until very recently, from the Boston Globe. Maine National Guard members in Iraq and Afghanistan are never far from the thoughts of their loved ones. Thanks to a popular family support program, they're now even closer. The Flat Daddy and Flat Mommy phenomenon, in which life-size cutouts of service members overseas are given by the Maine National Guard to spouses, children, and relatives back home. The flat daddies ride in cars, sit at the dinner table, visit the dentist, and are even brought to confession. Quote, I prop him up in a chair or sometimes put him on the couch and cover him up with a blanket, says Kay Judkins of Caribou, Maine, whose husband is a minesweeper mechanic in Afghanistan. The cat will curl up on the blanket and it looks kind of weird. At the request of relatives, about 200 flat daddy and flat mommy photos have been enlarged and printed at the State National Guard headquarters in Augusta, Maine. The families cut out the photos, which show the guard members from the waist up, and glued them to a $2 piece of foam board. Sergeant First Class Barbara Claudel, the state family support director who began the program, said the response from families has been giddily enthusiastic. It's a novel approach, says John Goheen, spokesman for the National Guard Association of the United States. Flat Daddy. Ladies and gentlemen. Yes, it's America in the 21st century. Live in it and love it. Hello, welcome to the show.
Starts at midnight, you pay your own wages. Make something of yourself. Like lions in their cages.
heart you've got to give is your own. So if you find some woman whose future ain't in stone, the heart you've got to give is your own. The heart you've got to give is your own. The heart you've got to give is your own.
From spitting distance from Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer. No, don't do it. That's not a recommendation as to what to do. I'm just the definition of distance is all. I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you to this edition of the show. Because, you know, you spit in that lake, these levees, I don't want to scare anybody, but you never know. The buried lead this week might be this. A year-long State Department investigation is the lead and has found that the chairman of the agency that oversees the Voice of America and other government broadcasting operations improperly used his office, putting a friend on the payroll and running a, quote, horse racing operation with government resources. This is Kenneth Tomlinson. And the first question it would raise is, what's the deal with these people in this administration and horses? First, Mike Brown ran the Arabian Horse Association so well, and now this guy. But this is the second time in less than a year that an internal investigation has found evidence of rules violations by Kenneth Tomlinson, chairman of the Broadcasting Board of Governors. And the lead would be the very end of the story. A White House spokeswoman, Emily Lorimer, says the president continues to support Tomlinson's pending renomination as chairman of the Broadcast Board of Governors. She had no further comment. So only two investigations this year found rule violations, and that's our guy. Maybe because of the horses. U.S. military leaders in Baghdad, you probably heard this, have put out for bid a two-year, $20 million public relations contract that calls for extensive monitoring of U.S. and Middle Eastern media in an effort to promote more positive coverage of news from Iraq. The contract calls for assembling a database of selected news stories and assessing their tone as part of a program to provide public relations products that would improve coverage of the military command's performance. That's according to a statement of work attached to the proposal. My question is, wasn't Karen Hughes supposed to tart up our public diplomacy? Bush's longtime advisor, Karen Hughes, wasn't she supposed to make our coverage better? Yes, she was. But apparently she's busy with the horses. The U.S. military, you know, shot down a target missile this week using its long-range missile defense system, the first time such a test has intercepted a mock enemy warhead since 2002. Pentagon officials hailed the test as a major step forward for the missile shield, but experts cautioned that the test lacked some real-world conditions, such as enemy efforts to defeat the system, a surprise attack, and an attack involving multiple missiles. The Air Force General, Lieutenant General Henry Trey Obering III, director of the Missile Defense Agency, said he thinks the U.S. military would have a, quote, good chance of shooting down a missile that threatened the United States with a system that would be very capable if it had to be used today. This is about as close as we can come to an end-to-end test of our long-range missile defense system, he said. This was the first time the system was successful. So, one test, one success. Very good chance. But here would be the buried lead in this story. Officials operating the system knew roughly when the target would be launched and where it would originate. So, North Korea, if you would just please let us know when you're going to launch and from where. the system will have a good chance of knocking your missiles down. The military has also yet to fully deploy an advanced radar system that would be located on a floating platform off Alaska's coast. The radar would be part of this. The radar was tested off the coast of California, but it has not been winterized for... I swear I didn't make that up. It has not been winterized for northern conditions, even though it's going to be deployed in Alaska. It's not cold in Alaska, is it? They have a good horse racing operation there. The only other reason why you might not want to bet the house or the farm or the country on this missile defense system yet is that the test in question was postponed Thursday because of fog in Alaska. When it cleared up, they ran the test. So North Korea, please don't launch when it's foggy. Please, please, please. I want to welcome all the listeners, however many there might be, who are tuning into this program for the first time because they might have been directed to it by an interview I did this week on BBC Radio 4. I know at least one person made the switch, so welcome. Welcome to y'all. And right now, a feature so copyrighted that it's been imitated 4 million times since it originated on this broadcast right after 9/11. I think there was a piece on the front page of this week's New York Times that was sort of inspired, let's say, by this copyrighted feature, the Apologies of the Week and the Near Apologies. Almost Sorry is NBC, which expressed regret for an Emmy Awards comedy sketch that included a mock plane crash. It aired on the network the evening of a fatal Kentucky jetliner accident. Quote, our hearts and prayers, or our hairs and parts, go out to the many families who lost a loved one in the plane crash in Kentucky on Sunday, and to the entire community that has suffered this terrible loss, NBC said in a statement the day after the controversy. NBC has hearts? In no way would we ever want to make light of this terrible tragedy, NBC said. The filmed opening during the Emmy telecast was meant to spoof some of television's most well-known scenes. The timing was unfortunate, and we regret any unintentional pain it may have caused. The airing of the sketch was condemned by the general manager of NBC's Lexington, Kentucky affiliate, WLEX. It was a live telecast. We were completely helpless. Really? You don't have a button? Dateline Burbank, Brooke Shields says Tom Cruise has apologized for publicly criticizing her use of antidepressants after the birth of her first daughter. He came over to my house and he gave me a heartfelt apology, Shields said during an appearance on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Is that still on? Yes, it is. Of course it is. And he apologized for bringing me into the whole thing and for everything that happened. And this is still Shields talking. And through it all, I was so impressed with how heartfelt it was. And I didn't feel at any time that I had to defend myself, nor did I feel that he was trying to convince me of anything other than the fact that he was deeply sorry, and I accepted it. Cruz's spokesman confirmed the celebrities have made up. A German junior minister in the government has apologized for a speech he gave at a concert commemorating Buchenwald concentration camp in which he was accused of passing over the suffering of the victims. Hermann Schaefer, deputy minister of state for cultural affairs, said he had made the wrong speech at the opening of an arts festival in the eastern city of Weimar, and he did not mean to overlook the camp's victims. I would do it differently today. I'll admit that quite openly, he said. I didn't know there were concentration camp survivors sitting in the front row. I'm sorry, and I apologize for it. I could have included them more strongly in the speech, and probably could have, and probably should have. His speech concentrated on the flight and expulsion of Germans from eastern territories in World War II and did not address Buchenwald's victims. An apology by the former apartheid minister of law and order in South Africa, Adrian Vlak, for the atrocities committed under his command has been hailed as a watershed moment for South Africa. I'm extremely happy that he's done that, says South Africa's former deputy minister of law and order. Vlak apologized in a meeting this month, he requested, with Reverend Frank Chicane, director general of the presidency in South Africa, because he saw Chicane as a symbol of the victims who suffered at the hands of police during that era. Vlok washed Chicane's feet to show his humility. I bet you Tom Cruise didn't wash Brooke Shields' feet. CNN apologized this week after an open microphone transmitted an anchor's bathroom conversation with another woman live over the network as it was carrying President Bush's speech in New Orleans. CBNN experienced audio difficulties during the president's speech today in New Orleans. The statement read, "We apologize to our viewers and the president for the disruption." CNN apologized to the White House as well. It wasn't clear whether it was a technical or human malfunction. And CNN, citing corporate policy, said it wouldn't comment on whether anyone would be disciplined. That's a news network, ladies and gentlemen. Its corporate policy is to clam up. A radio station has discontinued an on-air contest called Mongoloid Mike that outraged advocates for the disabled. The contest, run by an evening DJ, asked callers to sing a song as if they were mentally retarded. Makes you proud to be in the medium, doesn't it? Well, I'm in the medium. Why am I asking you? Listeners will be asked to guess what the Mongoloid is singing, according to an Ohio agency which supports people with disabilities. John Stewart, program director for WZKL in Alliance, Ohio, said the three-minute contest ran about once a month for 8 months. He said the piece was, quote, a little insensitive, and it was time to discontinue it. An on-the-air apology was also planned. People from as far away as Colorado were calling the station, says the program director. I don't have an opinion on it. If it's been going on for 8 months, I don't think their audience is offended by it. The Mongoloid Mike contest, ladies and gentlemen. A couple of other media apologies sent directly after an apology to our readers, reads this one. After an investigation, the New Republic has determined that the comments in our talkback section defending Lee Siegel's articles under the name Sprezzatura were produced with Siegel's participation. We deeply regret misleading our readers. Lee Siegel's blog will no longer be published by the New Republic, and he has been suspended from writing for the magazine. And, dear sir, we're sorry, we accidentally sent you an email message. The email message was mistakenly sent to some individuals who had previously signed up with the Chicago Tribune website or another website operated by the Tribune Company, but had also requested to be unsubscribed from commercial email communications. We're taking every measure to ensure that this does not happen again. From the Chicago Tribune to me, Hezbollah's leader, Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah, publicly apologized for igniting the recent Lebanese conflict. He said, "We did not think that there was a 1% chance that the capture of an Israeli soldier would lead to a war of this scale and magnitude." Nice. Thank you. Thanks for the apology for the war. I put that right in the file with the apology for the levee breaches by the Army Corps of Engineers. European countries have apologized to the Africans for the havoc caused by their ancestors, which has led to Africa's underdevelopment and untold suffering of its people. The European delegates apologized during the European African Reconciliation Process Prayer Network in Zimbabwe, the capital city of Zimbabwe, Harare, on Friday. Could the meeting have a longer name? Republican gubernatorial candidate in Colorado, Bob Beaupre, apologized for saying black women get abortions at an appalling rate. The congressman said that in an interview broadcast on public radio. Beaupre did not cite the source of his statistic. Later, he issued a written statement. "I was wrong about the statistic I quoted in a recent interview with Colorado Public Radio, and I apologize to the African-American community and anyone else who was offended. I should have verified the statistic before repeating it," he said. He wants to be a congressman. Why should he verify? Oh, and the AEG, Anschutz Entertainment Group, which operates the Millennium Dome and wants to turn it into a super casino, has had to apologize for misrepresenting the views of local religious leaders. It claimed to, in documents posted on a government website, that the chaplaincy in the local area welcomed the creation of 4,600 jobs by the planned casino. But the claim will have to be removed after protests from the chaplaincy. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. It is indeed a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
There's a place where waits for nothing, are much less. Such a disgrace, we gotta get.
out of this mess. Coming in under the cover of darkness. How high shall we build this wall? Could have said more, but it would have seemed heartless. How hard did I slam that door? I swore I'd never walk away until I saw this. There's a town I know has a strange resemblance to Jericho. Even though seven horns are getting ready to blow, coming in under the cover of darkness. How high shall we build this wall? Could have said more, but it would have seemed heartless. How tight shall we close that door? Such a disgrace, wedding bells crumble in the street. Coming in under the cover of darkness. How high shall we build this wall? Could have said more, but it would have seemed heartless. How tight shall we shut that door? In the name of the Father and the Son, in the name of gasoline and a gun.
This is Le Show from New Orleans.
It's kudos for the people who hand out kudos, whatever kudos are.
And there's a good news side even to the JonBenet Ramsey story.
Got to be Inside Extra Access tonight for the start of September 2006.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mike DeVere.
And I'm Pat Mungo. Now that the Emmys and the MTV Video Music Awards are yesterday's news, we should be at the end of award season for another 4 months. But TV producer Jim Segrest has plans to change all that. Big plans.
Sure, every once in a while the Oscars or the Tonys are nominated for an Emmy, but for the most part, the people in the industry who get the least recognition, aside from the really talented ones, are the folks who put on the Grammys, the Screen Actors Guild Awards, the VMAs, the ESPYs, the Dove Gospel Music Awards. the Directors Guild.
When he finished listing all the award shows on TV, we asked Jim exactly what he's got cooking. One thing for sure, it's hot.
It's something that's never been tried before, the awards show awards. We think it's long past high time to honor the people who give their working lives to honoring other people. We think it's right, and we think it's going to do monster numbers.
Seacrest has already formed the Awards Show Academy, a crucial part of getting the Awards Show Awards on a major network.
Without an academy, the best you're going to do is basic cable. With an academy, literally, Fox is the limit. And since award shows in all the branches of the business are eligible, we have our pick of presenters from all these different kinds of stars. So we're looking at awe-inspiring numbers. That's one reason why we're calling it the Awe Awards. Awe, A-W, from awards. And awe from the feeling that every recipient is going to get when they receive the distinctive statuette.
Categories include Best Presenter, Best Dead People Montage, Most Outrageous Acceptance Speech, and Best Playoff Music. Producer Jim Seacrest hopes to have the first Award Show Awards show on the air in the sweet spot between Halloween and Thanksgiving, as soon as next year. So, gentlemen and ladies, start your TiVos.
When Colorado prosecutors decided this week not to file charges against the man who confessed to killing JonBenet Ramsey, it looked like America's most baffling child beauty queen murder case had reached still another dead end. But while most media focused on the story in Colorado, Inside Extra Access tonight got an exclusive interview with Dolores Danziger, who's determined to make JonBenet not a symbol of tragedy, but an inspiration to a new generation of child beauties.
The child beauty pageant community took a hit when JonBenet was killed, too, and for a long time, as producer of the Little Miss Baltimore pageant, I wondered if we really had a future. Then I decided that JonBenet would have wanted us to use her to breathe new life into the movement that had brought her so much joy and makeup skills to boot. And that was really the genesis and the Deuteronomy, too, of the Little Miss JonBenet pageant.
Starting in January, 4 to 7-year-old girls throughout the country will get to go through a grueling preliminary series of competitions at cooperating shopping malls throughout the country. Then, next June, the finals will be held in a city yet to be selected.
We've had bids from Tampa and both Kansas cities, and of course, those negotiations are ongoing. We've got wonderful sponsorships from our cosmetic and fashion and floral partners, and we already have a commitment from CNN to cover the event. And given the magic of the JonBenet name, we think that's only the beginning of the iceberg.
But contestants won't be trying to be JonBenet lookalikes. Far from it.
JonBenet was an icon of her time, but this is some other little beauty queen's time. JonBenet should be somebody to emulate, not somebody to imitate. Of course, if we do get a little girl who does look like her, so much the better.
The Little Miss JonBenet pageant will be brightening up your June, and we'll be there, ready to throw a tiny bouquet.
That's it for today, but Inside Extra Access tonight comes rolling back tomorrow with the results of our latest IEAT poll.
We asked if you think Katie Couric will be good for the CBS Evening News, and the results will have you feeling perky.
Till then, I'm Pat Mungo.
And I'm Mike DeVere.
So long from Culver City.
By my side, my heart is almost breaking with its tenderness and pride. I bless the world for bringing you into my empty life, and so I'll watch you while you're sleeping. I thank you for joy and love you bring me every day, for every precious moment that we share along the way. So many words I might forget to say. So then I'll watch you while you're sleeping. Until the day you leave me, and I know one day you will, I'll take such good care of you, I'll guard you when you're ill. For time is sadly fleeting, and life must not stand still. So till then I'll watch you while you're sleeping. Till then I'll watch you while you're sleeping.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, time to listen to the warm. News of the Warm, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. We don't copyright them, really. We just say it. Because it scares people away if you just say it. Don't you think? Dateline Switzerland, scientists may be fighting a losing battle in their efforts to keep pace with the fast rate of change to mountain environments caused by rising temperatures. This is a new one. There was a sense of urgency at the International Disaster Reduction Conference in Davos, Switzerland this week, and a belief that an integrated approach was needed to prevent huge, huge loss of life. Quote, "We observe that the threat is not necessarily increasing, but is definitely changing," says geography researcher Christian Hugel of Zurich University. "People have knowledge of dangers and danger zones based on events of centuries past, but we're crossing the border into an environment which has historically never been experienced, and this is a big problem. One of the new threats," he says, "is what he calls large slope instabilities." It's not what you think. "Caused by thawing permafrost, which could set off rock and ice avalanches impacting naturally and artificially dammed lakes, generating impact waves and floods." Aside from that, everything will be fine. The world faces a catastrophic spiral of global warming by 2050. The Royal Geographical Society in Britain was told this week, unless urgent action is taken to cut human-induced carbon emissions, temperatures could rise up to 8 degrees by 2100 because of a compost effect, which could see carbon dioxide levels rise 50% faster than previously estimated. This is from Professor Peter Cox of Exeter University. "Around one quarter of carbon emissions are absorbed by the soil right now, one quarter by the oceans, leaving one half in the atmosphere. It had previously been assumed these proportions would remain the same, but the professor said the response of soil to temperature was critically important in determining the rate of future climate change. He suggests global warming is damaging the soil's ability to absorb carbon emissions, meaning that a greater proportion will remain in the atmosphere, leading to greater global warming. He says this vicious cycle would reach crisis point in 2050, when a key threshold would be passed. After this point, the trend for the land to absorb carbon will be reversed, causing it to release carbon into the atmosphere." Not having heard from him yet, the world's top climate scientists were slightly less pessimistic in their latest forecasts for global warming. The Australian newspaper reported this week a draft report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, obtained by the newspaper, says the temperature increase could be contained to 2 degrees by 2100, if greenhouse gas emissions were held at current levels. So it's scary. It's not so scary. It's scary. It's not quite as scary. It's scarier. It's not quite as scary. How scary is it? You tell me. Ladies and gentlemen, would you, please? Would you be so kind? And now, yes, it's like a cavalcade of copyrighted features, because here comes news from outside the bubble. People in England listening in might know about this stuff, but we don't. Did you know, ladies and gentlemen, the prison that came to symbolize the abuse of Iraqis by U.S. soldiers and the dark side of America's war on terror has closed? Prisoners have been transferred out of Abu Ghraib jail in Baghdad. According to the Human Rights Minister of Iraq, quoted in the Rupert Murdoch-owned Times of London, American forces turned the prison over to Iraqi authorities sometime after removing the last prisoners on August 15th. Hey, make a good Walmart. No, it's big. See what I'm saying? Also, I don't know if this made the American papers. Organic milk has more health benefits than standard milk, and official advice should reflect this, according to scientists. A letter signed by 14 scientists has been sent to the Food Standards Agency of Great Britain, saying that organic milk has higher levels of omega-3 fatty acids, which are thought to boost health. Thought. A damning 6-page letter on the hunt for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq was suppressed by Australia's foreign minister, according to a former senior diplomat. Hey, they really are our allies, aren't they? Dr. John Gee, a world-renowned expert on chemical weapons, worked with the U.S.-led Iraq Survey Group after the war and wrote the critical letter when he decided to resign. In it, he warned the Australian government the hunt was fundamentally flawed and there was a, quote, distinct reluctance on the part of many here and in Washington to face the facts that Iraq had no WMD. Dr. Gee recorded an email soon after that that Foreign Minister Alexander Downer has issued instructions that my letter is not to be distributed to anyone. In another email, Dr. G revealed that the head of the Defense Department in Australia informed him his department did not receive a copy of the critical letter. Even Dr. G was working in Iraq under contract to the department. A spokesman for Mr. Downer said the minister did not recall receiving Dr. G's letter and described it as a conspiracy theory material showing that the letter had not been given to the head of the Defense Department. I've heard a lot of conspiracy theories over the years, but I've not heard that one before, said the spokesperson. However, documents, including Dr. G's resignation letter and a series of emails he wrote to his colleague, Rod Barton, another senior weapons inspector, reveal efforts to contain his findings. Downer has previously acknowledged he was personally briefed by Dr. G when he returned from inspections. He's never revealed the contents of that briefing. From the emails, it appears Downer received the damning findings months before he and the Prime Minister finally accepted that no weapons of mass destruction would be found in Iraq. This is from the Australian newspaper, The Age. 1 month after his briefing with Dr. G, Foreign Secretary Downer made a public appearance with the U.S. head of the Iraq Survey Group. Downer insisted at that time the weapons hunt was still a work in progress, and he could not draw any conclusions. But Dr. G's emails reveal that every senior level of the Australian government, including the Prime Minister, the Defense Department, and the Foreign Secretary, was briefed by him when he returned from Baghdad in March 2004. In a blunt conclusion, Dr. G's letter stated, quote, I now believe there are no WMD in Iraq and that while the Iraq Survey Group has found a number of research activities, it has found no evidence so far on ongoing WMD programs of the type I had assumed would be there. This is March 2004. I have concluded, Dr. G wrote, that the process here is fundamentally flawed and there is a distinct reluctance on the part of many here and in Washington to face the facts. But we know that's not true, don't we, ladies and gentlemen? Don't we know that? Isn't that what we know? I thought that was what we knew. I'm over here. The leader of Northern Iraq's... Still more news from outside the bubble. The leader of Northern Iraq's autonomous Kurdish region has ordered officials not to fly the Iraq national flag in a further sign of the country's separatist tensions. This according to Agence France-Presse. According to the Kurdistan administration, we decide to hoist the flag of Iraqi Kurdistan officially, said the statement from Kurdish President Barzani. They referred to the Iraq national flag, as the Ba'athist flag. Iraq's Kurdish minority associates Iraq's red, white, and black banner with ousted leader Saddam Hussein's hated Ba'ath Party. Former U.S. Secretary of State James Baker, who heads an independent panel charged with taking a fresh look at U.S. policy in Iraq, was meeting with the most senior Sunni leaders in the coalition government on Friday. The U.S. Embassy declined further comment on the unannounced visit to Iraq. It was not clear how long Baker, who also met the Kurdish president of Iraq, Talabani, had been in the country. Those secret missions, they show you how safe it is over there, don't they? Baker sat silently at a news conference held after his meeting with Deputy Prime Minister Salem al-Zabai. Baker, of course, close friend of the Bush family. His bipartisan Iraq Study Group has kept a low profile. It's another thing called the Iraq Study Group. Has kept a low profile since being set up by Congress in March to study the war. Panel members have spoken little of their work. They include Sandra Day O'Connor, former Attorney General Ed Meese, and former Defense Secretary William Perry. The White House said in March the Iraq Study Group would provide an independent look at the way forward in Iraq. Of course, President Bush, fresh from his summer vacation in Crawford, Texas, where he was reported by the papers to be reading The Stranger and a couple works by Shakespeare, came to New Orleans and said, "I've come back to New Orleans to tell you the words that I spoke on Jackson Square are just as true today as they were then." Unquote. That's a little disturbing. Anyway, it all might be fodder for some phone calls involving 41, 43, and James Baker next here on the show.
And frankly, Mr. President, all I could do was sit there and stare straight ahead and wish to my knickers that I was back in Houston just fending off the litigious sharks of the petrochemical industry, you know, who are pussycats by comparison to this load.
I know it's rough, Bake, but, you know, if it were an easy job.
No, I know. You'd have asked Scowcroft. But, Mr. President, these are people for whom a handshake serves as a lethal attack. I mean, I should have brought a food taster over here.
Hold on, Jim. I gotta take this. Yellow.
Hey, 41. How they hanging?
43. Here, you've been doing some heavy reading.
Yeah, well, you know, some Shakespeare's and some Camus. You know, like Laura told me, never hurts to give some deep thinkers a once over. Great source of strength to read The Stranger and realize how lost somebody can be who doesn't have that ear of the Lord on a regular basis. Great insight there.
Yeah. Look, on the other line,
so
I got...
So great seeing you and Mom last weekend. Mm-hmm. I think family gatherings bring out the best in our family.
Uh-huh. Well, everybody was pleased as punch that you could take time out of your...
Everybody down in New Orleans asked about you.
No, don't think they did, but nice of you to say so. Who asked about me?
Oh, well, you know, the mayor, for one, specifically wanted to know whether you're still alive.
Let me just think.
Very sobering trip down to the Gulf Coast. Of course, everything is sobering now, but I mean especially sobering. Mm-hmm. Seeing so much progress, so many good people working hard, and vice versa, just makes you thank the good Lord that you don't live down there.
Yeah, just give me a second, Sprout. Hello, Jim.
Yes, sir. Tell you the truth, it's gotten so bad, even the Kurds don't want to meet with us. And, of course, they're on our payroll, so...
Just got 43 on the other line. Do you want to...
Yes, sir. I'll hang on. Might not get this connection again. Mm. We're with our friends at the Interior Ministry, tying up the few available international circuits with their porn downloads.
Yeah, be right back.
Steadfast Eagle.
No, it's just still me.
I know. I just like today's code name. It's one I personally told the Secret Service I wanted to see on the list, and pronto. See, at a time when it kind of seems like maybe we need to bring more effective management toolage to what Dick Cheney calls the world account, it's kind of nice to have something that you say it, it gets done. Mm-hmm. You know, like a pitcher turning 40. Good to know, haven't lost it.
Oh, Sprout, your time to leave a legacy of accomplishment and achievement is still ahead of you.
Well,
has to be, because it's not behind you. Matter of fact, got Jim Baker on the other line giving kind of a, you could call it a progress report on his latest trip over there.
To the progress zone? That's what we're going to roll out as the new branding for the Middle East right after Labor Day. What do you think? Sends the right tone?
Yeah, Beck doesn't seem to see it quite as sunny as that. See, that's what the problem was with this Hamlet fella. Mm-hmm. Just couldn't see the bright side of the penny. Reading that play or book or whatever it was, it just was a clarifying moment for me, 41, because I knew I didn't want to be that fella. So, look, I thought I was doing a nice thing, kind of thing a son does for his dad by letting you send some of your so-called wise men over to the progress zone to sit around and not see the progress. But, you know, that doesn't mean I have to listen to them. Thought I was doing the kind of thing a dad does for his son by not including any real intelligence people on the group. Gives everybody kind of a benign deniability. But look, why don't
I know it's kind of like preacher to the chorus girls here, but just don't want you to keep getting the wrongful idea that we don't have lively and vigorous debate within my administration about all of this.
Easy to get that impression sometimes, got to admit, but
plenty of people I still listen to, and I'm widening my circle to all four corners of the opinion spectrum as we speak, but plenty of people fully prepared to argue with tenacity that we should be using the Progress Zone, Brandon, for the Gulf Coast instead of the Middle East. So, wide range of...
Let me just see if Mike has a kind of executive summary of his findings so far, and... Jim.
Yes, sir. Haven't been kept hanging this long since the president of the Kurdish parliament refused to share his limo with me.
Well,
have you ever tried to get a cab in Kurdistan, Mr. President?
Bake, trying to give 43 a sense of the situation as you're finding it. Mm-hmm. Got a one-sentence takeaway for the Sprout?
Mr. President, I don't know if this is a civil war they've got over here, but just last night in Baghdad, during a brief lull in the violence, mm-hmm. I saw two Iraqi soldiers, one Sunni and one Shiite, sitting around a fire playing harmonicas and trading stories about their comrades.
Okay, be back with you momentarily.
Steadfast Eagle, so what's Baker got to say besides his finding that Condi Rice is no Jim Baker, which, by the way, I take as a compliment?
He's not as optimistic as Rumsfeld,
mm-hmm.
not as pessimistic as Murtha, yet.
Okay, see, that's what I need. A little spoonful of nuance helps the moral clarity go down.
Mm.
Got a big week ahead, going back to ground zero, rehearsing another bullhorn speech. Whole different voice technique.
43, just want to make sure the essence of Bake's message gets through to you. He's still looking for a way forward. He just tied up in the moment trying to figure out which way exactly might be forward.
No, I appreciate that, 4-1. And just tell him, as far as I'm concerned, he has my ear whenever he wants to report further on the progress zone. Unless we decide that's the Gulf Coast, and unless he wants to report on that, too.
Will do. Barr says don't worry about the underwear. We'll courier it back to you.
Yeah, I bet you never saw a presidential seal in that spot before, huh? Hey, you take care. 41.
You too, 43. Message delivered, Bank.
All right, sir. I'll talk to you from Bowser if I can.
Do your best, Jim. Country's dependent on you.
I always do, sir. It always is.
We were too late with the food and the water. Couldn't get close with a 10-foot pole. So we failed to accomplish just what we oughter. But we're gonna make New Orleans whole. New Orleans whole. Nobody's there now, but there's gonna be plenty. Even the ex-gov be out on parole. I got building biz pals, maybe 10 or 20. We're gonna make New Orleans whole. New Orleans whole. They said we were slow pokes, now we're gonna be spunky. Never too late for to be in control. Building a new town, too busy to be funky. We're gonna make New Orleans whole. hands whole. This isn't the time now for pointing those fingers. That's much for now. Memories grow cold, even though the sign still lingers. We're gonna make New Orleans whole. Make it more like us, so no one needs a bus. From Air Force One now, you can see the big picture. All those victims, mainly black as coal, can't leave them so poor now, while we just get richer. We're gonna make New Orleans whole. Whole. There's such great ideas for this whole reconstruction. The best and the brightest gonna play their role. And the locals have bit parts in the production. We're gonna make New Orleans whole. Yeah, we're gonna make New Orleans whole. New Orleans whole. God bless.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this weekend's edition of the show. The program returns next week at this same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, around the world via the internet at two different locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available as a free download at www.audible.com/the show, available Channel 136 at Sirius Satellite Radio, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like Mayor Ray bringing some business back from Shanghai.
You gotta be kidding me.
If you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, and Chicago desks, and to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO in New Orleans. Isn't that the way Anderson Cooper pronounces it? He should know. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from New Orleans.